But anyway, it's good to be here. I appreciate these staff members. One of the things that you need to know, I need to say just a few things about our association. Coffee Association is good, but Brother Sonny usually tries to make that something that I do. But it really is because of committees like you have. I usually spend 4 nights out of 5 in some kind of committee meeting or something like that. And so I kind of know what that's like just on the association level rather than a church. But during this past summer, one of your staff members here, Catherine, led the children's camp at the Vineyard. Now, she's been on the children's committee for almost ever since she's been here. And last year and this year, she was chair of that committee. And we've been doing the children's camp and youth camp for quite a few years. And but this was the best we've ever had, the most people, and not just in numbers. But one of the things that I've always felt was that if you give quality kind of teaching, quality camp, quality anything, then sooner or later it will pay for itself. You know, people will say, oh yeah, that's great, I want to be there. And the kind of camp that we had for the last 2 or 3 years has been such that people will want to be there. Kids want to go back, and their parents would like for them to go as well. So I just want you to know that I appreciate that. First Baptist also has given a lot to Bill Sneed Lodge. It's a new lodge, and if you'd like to take a look at it, you might look at the Vineyard page on Facebook, and I think as well the website, but you'll be happy to know that it is up, it's dried in, and it's beginning to really look nice. So you'll be glad to see that that is there. And that's a tremendous kind of thing that that has been taking place. It really is a giant step for the Vineyard work. Steve said that about 4,000 people went through there last year, but I'm sure it'll be more than that this year. But so far this year, we've had 99 people make professions of faith at camps at the Vineyard. It is fast becoming one of the best tools that we have for evangelism and discipleship. It really is a great thing. So again, thank you for doing that. And I would like to say a special word of thank you to Brother Sonny for allowing me a few minutes in the pulpit here. It is one of those things where if a pastor has trust in a person and allows him to take pulpit, is a real big deal. And I want Brother Sonny to know that I appreciate that, and I appreciate his friendship. Just pray the very best for him and Celia, Miss Stump, and I'm grateful again that he's here. I remember whenever Sonny had not come, but he was talking to y'all about coming. And I said to the pastor search committee that I didn't think that there was anybody in the entire world that could do what Sonny could do for First Baptist Enterprise. And that really was what I was thinking. And it was not because Sonny and I were just so personally close. It just really was my thinking. And I know that it's been a really good thing. Like this morning, you know, you had people baptized, people joined the church by letter, those kind of things. And that happens all the time. And so that's a wonderful thing. You know, I've been preaching. Y'all know that I'm just 39 years old, but I've been preaching for about 46 years, ever since I was 19. And I'm not really good with math, but that's about the best I can do. But out of that perspective, you know, I've been in places where I could learn a lot about the Bible, learn a lot about people and needs and how to minister to people and those kind of things, and I've served a lot. And I believe that I could be a fair pastor. I really do. I think I'm a good pastor. But I tell you what, I'd hate to know that I had to follow Brother Sonny Moore here. Goodness gracious. Not because of you, but who could follow that? You know, it's just one of those things. Whoever comes, you know, he's going to have some real tough hide because people always say, well, Brother Sonny did this and Sonny did that. But what a great pastor you have, and I appreciate him more than I can say. God bless. Let me ask you to turn with me to the book of Ephesians, chapter 3, or look at it on the screen. We're looking at a passage which is just a prayer of the Apostle Paul, a prayer. And the book of Ephesians is what we call a prison epistle. He wrote it while he was in prison, we believe in Rome. And some people think there were two imprisonments, some one. But whether you think one or two, the end result was all the same. Y'all know how it ended? He lost his head. He was killed for his faith. He was a martyr for the gospel. That's how it was. So whenever you look at the book of Ephesians and you read it, you have to understand that the Apostle Paul was chained to a Roman soldier every day. He was chained to a soldier. His friends were able to come and go. He would make assignments. Timothy, you go here. Mark, you go there. Those kind of things. And he was able to witness to soldiers and other people, but he was basically imprisoned. And he was writing, and I don't know if you've ever had any time whenever you've been kind of, out of the circle of running, like Brother Ben with a broke leg, and then also I understood this morning from what I heard little bits on the radio that also had appendicitis. Is that right? Oh, but anyway, whenever you get out of what you're able to do, and the Apostle Paul was really a mover and a shaker, but all of a sudden he was just incarcerated. He was, not able to move very much. Now that kind of stuff makes you kind of disappointed, heartbroken, sometimes dejected, just feel beaten, like, you're very depressed. A lot of times that happens. But in this letter, the Apostle Paul writes to his friends and he says, look, don't feel sorry for me because God is working his purpose out in me. And he talked about some of the ways that that was happening. And even Caesar's household, some in Caesar's household had come to know the Lord. Well, but he was writing to a group of people who also were experiencing the same kind of persecution, the same kind of difficulty. They were a group in Ephesus who were being persecuted for their faith. They were losing jobs. They were, being ostracized socially. Some of them were being hurt. There were all kinds of things that were happening to them. And it's very easy whenever that takes place just to want to throw in the towel. But listen, in this prayer, the Apostle Paul prays for them. And notice what he prays for. He doesn't just pray like we normally do, oh Lord, bless this person, may this person get well, help them not have any problems. He prays for strength and grace and love in the midst of the problems. He prays for God to be glorified and honored, those sorts of things. And it's a big difference than the way we normally pray. Now, I do believe we ought to pray for anything that concerns us, and God is concerned with that. But look at the noble request in this prayer, Ephesians chapter 3, verse 14. For this cause I bow my knees to the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, of whom the whole family in heaven and earth is named, that he would grant you, according to the riches of his glory, to be strengthened with might by his Spirit in the inner man, that Christ may dwell in your hearts by faith, that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may be able to comprehend with all saints what is the breadth and length and depth and height, and to know the love of Christ, which passes knowledge, that you might be filled with all the fullness of God. Now, this is a lot to say, so I'll probably just camp out in the first request. There's a lot more that we ought to talk about here. He prays for their strength. He prays for closeness to God. He prays for them to be loving, secure in God's love, and then full of God. He prays for these things. But I'd like for us just to focus on this passage that he would grant you in verse 16, according to the riches of his glory, to be strengthened with might by his Spirit in the inner man. Now, what is it to be strengthened in the inner man? What is it that you would have strength in the inner person? I looked at some commentaries about this and just said, spiritual strength, spiritual strength. I think that's just a lot of gobbledygook. It doesn't really say anything. Does that mean that it gives you enough strength to be at church on Sunday morning, Sunday evening? No. What it's talking about is that inner strength that a person has, that ability to deal with things. And I believe that on one part, it's talking about the ability to cope with the terrible situations they're under. They were under pressure, you know, they were carrying a heavy load, they were facing persecution, and so it's to be able to stand in the midst of all of that problem and difficulty. But I think there's more to it than that. I think it has to do with this little phrase about having heart. Having heart. I really have studied this, looked at it for a long time, and I think this having strength in the inner man is about having heart. Somebody plays ball with heart. Somebody works with heart. Somebody lives with heart. And if you don't have heart in what you're doing, then you've really lost a lot. But Paul was in prison. He had a lot of things going with him. They were having trouble. But he prays for them to have the ability to live, to the resolve to do what they needed to do, the fortitude, the drive, everything they need to have to live life to the fullest and best. That's what I think Paul is praying for them. Let me explain it to you this way. I usually don't talk about my kids. I have three, but I've made it a policy over the years. But now, since my oldest daughter is 5 years older than I am, I guess it's fair game to talk about her. When Denise was about 10 or 11 years old, she liked to play ball. And they were having City League softball in Chickasaw, Alabama. And so Denise wanted to play. And I taught her to run and to throw and to hit. And she could do that just about like a boy. But she could hit about like me. She couldn't hit it to the fence, but she could place the ball and she could usually make a hit wherever she tried it. And she was a good player. But she just wanted to do it. A lot of the girls out there, though, didn't really have that same kind of desire, it seemed like, to want to do what she did. So here they were out there playing. Denise, in this particular game, she was playing left field. And so she'd backed up all the way because one of the girls there was able to hit that ball over the fence. You know, a girl 12 years old, it's amazing to me that a girl 12 years old can hit the ball further than I can, but it's so. And anyway, Denise wasn't going to get burned. Now, Catherine, you know that she's like this. She's a real competitive kind of person. And so at any rate, she was back there, and this girl hit that ball, and you could hear it crack, the bat against that ball. And, of course, I'm in the stands with all the rest of the parents, and both teams' parents are on the same bleachers. You know, there weren't bleachers on both sides of the field. And so, anyway, as she hit the ball, and it really hit hard, but the trajectory was just a high pop-up fly. And where it was going to land was several steps behind the shortstop. Now, it would have been an easy play for the shortstop, but this girl really wasn't interested in playing. She was there. She had on her uniform. She was in place, but she really didn't have much heart for what she was doing. Denise, on the other hand, was all the way at the fence, and whenever she saw what the ball was going to do, she started running toward the ball. Now, those of you who've run that far know how, you know, tough it is to get to a pop-up fly that far. It's not an easy thing to do. Well, being the daddy, I was looking at Denise, and I thought, honey, you'll never make that. You know, I'm glad that you're trying, but you will never make that. Well, she just kept running, and the closer she came, it seemed like the farther she would be away from making the play. And so all through this, and it seemed to me like the play went on for about 3 days. You know, it happened like that, but it just seemed like a long time for me. Well, she just ran and ran, and the ball just kept coming. The shortstop just kind of looking around. But Denise was making that. And as the ball came near the ground, she dived, and the ball landed right in her glove. Well, Daddy's heart just pounding like this. You know, I was as proud for Denise as I could be. But it wasn't just me. I noticed that everybody on the whole stands, their side, our side, everybody was up clapping and doing like this. Everybody was inspired by her trying so. But that's playing with heart. We watch ball games all the time, and occasionally we're lucky enough to see somebody who just does something, and their effort inspires us to do something more. You know, it's not just somebody who had dressed out, but it's somebody who really does something. And sometimes, even if you don't like the sport, you see somebody play with such heart, and you still get inspiration from what they do. All of you have seen that, right? I believe that there are some people who think that all they have to do, though, is dress out. Even in church, instead of really serving God with heart, playing with heart, all you got to do is just show up. Matt, you probably don't know anybody like that. And of course, I'm not talking about First Baptist Church. I'm talking about those other churches in our association. Y'all know what I mean, right? It does make a difference to be playing with heart. It matters for those people in Ephesus. It mattered for the Apostle Paul. It matters for First Baptist Church Enterprise. It matters for everybody if we can play with heart or just be there. And I just know that there are a lot of people who just feel that all they have to do is be there. But I believe that our Heavenly Father is just as proud of us when we live with heart, when we serve with heart, as I was of Denise whenever she made that play. You know, it was one of those things that I didn't even care if she played or not. It'd been fine with me if she didn't even play softball. But since she did it with such oomph. You know, I'm just proud of that. I was glad. I believe that God's Spirit can infuse and energize a person with this kind of inner strength, this kind of heart, so that you can live life to the fullest and best, so that you can do what you need to do. I believe that God can help us to do that. Through His Spirit, He can give us that kind of inner strength so that we can do more than we'd ever thought. He can give you integrity and fortitude. He can give you bravery where you might feel like you really don't have it. He can help you in every way. And you know, it could be that you're here tonight and you've come up against an obstacle in your life. Sickness, not much money, job, relationship. Thousands of obstacles out there in the world. And sometimes the smallest obstacle can dishearten us. But I'm saying to you that God can be with you and give you inner strength. As we draw closer to Him, He can help us to be the kind of men, women, boys, and girls He wants us to be. I was preaching somewhere after the service one Sunday night. A 16-year-old girl says, "Dr. John, can I speak to you?" And so we went over to a side of the church, and there were still a bunch of people in the sanctuary, but she just talked with me privately for a few minutes. And she said, "I'm 16 years old." And she said, "When I was 12, my daddy worked at chicken houses. There were some other people working there with him, and one of the men there attacked me, exploited me, abused me." And she said, "And he did it more than once." Said, "I didn't know what to do. I finally told my parents. They told the police. We spent months, you know, waiting trial and having trial and all these kind of things. And he got off, and it's just been an embarrassment to me." And she said, "You know, I just don't know what life holds for me." Now, let me tell you about the girl. She's 16. She was pretty. She was smart, A honor roll, all A's. She was a congenial kind of person. But somehow this thing that had happened to her just took the wind out of her sails. Now, I'm not trying to make light of the fact of what happened to her. And I know that sometimes it takes a lot to get over those kind of things. I'm not trying to make light. But she said, "Dr. John, I don't know if my life will ever be good like everybody else's." My heart just sank and went out for her. And I said, "No, honey, that's wrong. Your life can be rich and good and full. You have the best years ahead of you if you will only accept it and allow God to bless you in that." Was I right in that? Yes, I know that I was. I know that things can happen that are bad, that things that other people do and things that we do that are stupid, but God can help us. And I believe that God can help her. I honestly and truly do. Sometimes we emphasize and we focus on the problem so much, though, that we forget about all the joy and the glory and everything else that God can give us in this life. And I do believe that you know, it needs to be something where you find inner strength. But the thing is, my point is, she was beaten. She'd lost heart for living. She'd lost heart for everything. That one experience caused her to just lose everything. It was like life is not even good anymore. No, if it's with you, life is still good. And God can help you to have heart that you need, no matter what the situation is. This can happen with individuals, whatever kind of problem you have. And what a great thing it is to see these young people up here. I'm grateful for that. What a great thing it is to see these young folks here. But, you know, you don't have to be an old man like me to have problems. These folks right here are old enough to have problems. But you're also old enough to know the grace of God and the power of God in your life. You can know these things, and you really can. This can happen to a church. One day, deacon from one of the churches came to my office some years back, and he says, "Dr. John, we just have 10 or 12 people in this church, and it'd been around since 1855. Long time for church to be around. But they said, you know, we're just too old to reach anybody anymore. We can't do anything, and what we've decided to do is just sign over the papers to the church, to the association, so when we close the doors, at least all the property will go to the association." Well, they just lost their pastor, and I said, "Well, let me come over and be with you for a few months." And I was, and then they called a pastor. And it just a guy from, actually, he lived out of town, had to drive in on weekends. But the first summer after that, it had been just several months, but the first summer, they decided to have vacation Bible school, and they had 49 in vacation Bible school whenever they said they couldn't reach anybody. They're still doing great. Matter of fact, they bought land so that they could build and add on, and they built something else. But again, they had lost heart. But you know, if you got two people together for a church, that's enough, right? I mean, if you just got one or two, that's enough. If you've got the vision and the idea that God can do something for you and through you, that's really what it takes. God can work miracles with us if we just allow Him to do that. But if you feel defeated, if you've lost heart, and if you've lost hope, then what have you? But faith is that overcomes the world. And whenever Jesus talked about faith being the victory, then we need to understand that. Sometimes we can get inspiration from things that aren't even people. I read a Time magazine article last year about Share-A-Me, a pigeon, C-H-E-R-A-M-I. Any of you ever read that? You know what I'm talking about, Share-A-Me? See what kind of readers we got out here. It's all right to read stuff other than the Bible every now and then. I'm just kidding. Share-A-Me, a pigeon, carrier pigeon. During World War I, a little history lesson. Maybe it won't hurt too much. But history. During World War I, they used carrier pigeons. The Army had a signal corps, and you've seen some of these signal corps, you know, with flags where they wave them and they're able to make contact. But you have to have somebody with spyglasses looking at the other person in order to see what they're doing. But if you're out of sight, then you can't use the flags anymore. And so this was before two-way radio kind of came into being, and so they carried pigeons with them. Well, in 1918, this was the Battle of Meuse-Argonne Offensive, the last two-month battle of the First World War. It was in France, and when our army people had lined up trying to take Nazi-held territory, or not Nazi, but German-held territory at that time. And so you had just a super big offensive. And so the idea was that it would be such a strong burst against the enemy lines that they would just be able to push through and win the place, win the war. Well, it just so happened that, they had artillery kind of softening up the land and all this kind of stuff, and then they stopped that, and then our soldiers made this big push. Well, it just so happened that only one battalion, the 77th Infantry, made it through enemy lines. And as soon as they made it through, the enemy lines closed up, and so they were behind enemy lines, and it was a tough place to be. No other group made it through that time in 1918 but Major Whittlesey's 77th Infantry. Well, people were falling. They were being shot. It was a tough time. And by the second day, our men didn't know that the 77th Infantry had made it behind lines. And so they were doing more softening up the territory by lobbing big shells over there. And some of our guys were being exploded by our own shells. Well, by the second day, there were only little over 200 people left. 200 people out of 500 that went there the day before. That's falling. Well, they had these pigeons, and so Major Whittlesey told them where they were on a little sheet of paper and asked for them to stop the shelling and those kind of things, and he rolled it up in a little bitty roll, and he put it in a little canister on the pigeon's leg, and they let the pigeon go. But as they let the pigeon go, the enemy knew what the pigeon was for, and so they started shooting at the pigeon, and the pigeon dropped. They did this again. Same thing. As soon as the pigeon cleared the brush, it was shot down. There was only one pigeon left, this little pigeon called Cher Ami. It's a French term, means dear friend. And so this little pigeon already had carried about 12 different messages successfully, but the little pigeon left, and I believe that he left with lots of prayers that day. He had to have lots of prayers go up because this was really their last hope. If this pigeon didn't make it, it was adios to the 77th Infantry. Well, this pigeon cleared the brush, and the soldiers started shooting at him, and just like the others, it started to fall. Talk about losing hope. I would imagine they had to do that. But then, in just a few moments, the pigeon rose again. And the soldiers still were shooting, but they missed it. The pigeon flew 35 miles in 25 minutes. It went to the place where the pigeoneers were, into a little cage, and there was a little thing that would make a bell ring whenever the pigeon went into the cage. And so as the pigeon went in, the pigeoneer heard it, went to see it. The pigeon was lying on its back, covered with blood. One eye was missing, and it had a hole the size of a quarter in its chest. Y'all know how big pigeons are? Y'all ever see quail or dove or pigeons? A hole the size of a quarter, there's not much chest left. I mean, it's basically the whole chest the size of a quarter, but a hole the size of a quarter. And the leg that was holding the message was hanging on by one tendon. That's the way they found the bird. Well, they took the message, sent it to headquarters. They did everything that they needed to do, and, they stopped the shelling. They sent a group of men in, and that day they rescued 194 people. 194 of our soldiers were saved because one little pigeon just wouldn't give up. One little pigeon just kept on. Well, it wasn't, but just immediately, that the 77th Infantry says, hey, this is our mascot, this little pigeon, this is going to be our sign, our symbol. And it was. But more than that, All the army thought this way it's going to be. They told the French about it. The French gave this pigeon a medal, the Croix de Guerre, which means the cross of war. The French. Any of you see Sergeant York, most decorated soldier in World War I, the movie by Gary Cooper? I see a few people who smile about it. But whenever they gave Sergeant York that same medal, you remember the general kissed him on each cheek, and Gary Cooper kind of looked like, ew, what is this? Well, it's the same medal they gave this pigeon, the Croix de Guerre. And then General Pershing, our leader in that area, also gave him a medal that we believe was the Silver Cross. They brought the pigeon back to America. It was able to live for nearly a year, but then it was the body of the pigeon was fixed, and they put it in the Smithsonian Institute. And you can actually go there today and see this and see the story about it. But they say that during the 1920s, there was not one American school child who did not know the name Cherami. You know, what is it to have heart? Well, it's great whenever you can just bolster up the fortitude and say, I'm going to do this. But you know, sometimes you just get down and you just can't bring that up. But God can give you the inner strength. And Paul prays here that you might be strengthened by God's Spirit in the inner man. That's what we're talking about, so that you could have heart to do what you need to do, to be the witness that you need to do the job you need to be the parent that you need to be, the spouse you need to be. Whatever it is, God can help you to do it, and not just do it, but to glorify Him in it, and to make other people say, wow, look at that, look at that. And you can inspire somebody else to do some work with what you've done. You can inspire somebody to be closer to God. You can inspire others to be drawn to Him. I'm grateful that we have Scripture, prayers like this. And you know, if everything in this world is against you, if you're close to God and you have heart that comes from Him, there is nothing that can defeat you. There is nothing. I mean, they might kill you, but you never will be defeated. And more than that, you can do something magnificent, wonderful, to honor the Lord. I'm going to close. I'd like to have a word of prayer. I'm going to ask Brother Sonny if he would come and conclude the services. He will, and I would think we'd probably want to him, Craig. So if you would just pray with me. Father, thank you again for your many blessings. Thank you for this wonderful church, great pastor, great staff. Thank you for the deacons who lead and those who teach Sunday school and other kinds of things throughout the course of the week. But I pray that you would just bless and help us, Lord, that we would be people who would be so close to you that we would draw from your strength, and that we in our inner person would be strengthened, and we would have heart to do those things to honor and please you and draw others to you. We ask in Christ's name.